but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I've been really eager to get our next guest on the show. He does a fantastic job at the Seattle Times. He is a master of versatility. He's a Swiss Army knife. He is Scott Hansen, who covers everything from baseball to rowing to football and soccer and back, and he's with us on this show. Can we, for a second, Scott, just talk about the range of your job? There are no 2 days that are alike, are there?
No, there really isn't. I was an assistant sports editor at the Seattle Times in charge of our college and pro sports for a few years, and I just didn't really like the management. I was ready to leave, and they said, is there any job that you would like? And I said, well, yeah, it wouldn't mind being a writer full-time, but I really don't want one beat. I want to cover everything, and if you guys need help on the copy of this, I can do that. I've got a copy editing background. So, yeah, for the last 6 or 7 years, I've done just about everything. I've covered Sounders games, Seahawks stuff, Mariner games. I was back at Mariner for a while. All the minor sports at UW, help out at all the football games. So I like that. I love being able to do a little bit of everything. I don't know a lot about anything, but I know a little bit about everything, I guess.
And here's the other thing. You don't get sick of people on that beat, right? Because if you're on a Mariners beat like Ryan Divish for all those years, you might not like the manager or the GM or the third baseman, and you go, oh, this is a grind. I see the same thing every day. You get a chance to, like, you were at the NCAA championships in Eugene, and you get a chance to see that over the weekend. By the way, how was that? How was the scene in Eugene?
You know, it wasn't that crowded, and I guess talked to a couple people they thought was a little bit of a maybe big track meet fatigue, right? I mean, NCAA championships anywhere else would be a huge deal, but in Eugene, that's just another track meet. But it was great. I mean, just seeing, it was a really cool event. I covered the Mall Sisters from Olympia, who they finished first and third in the pole vault, but they're probably the two best pole vaulters in the country. And I got a feeling they're identical twins, and they're probably going to be, could finish 1-2 in the Olympics in 2028. I'm guessing they'll probably be the darlings of the 2028 Olympics if they compete. I mean, identical twins, very well spoken. I mean, it's a cool story.
I am thinking about Oregon track and field, and they were underwhelming over the weekend. But I think you're right with the exhaustion. I mean, people talk about, Tracktown USA and the Olympic trials and the World Championships and Prefontaine Classics coming up on July 5th. And I think there's there is an exhaustion to it. Could track and field do something in your mind, Scott, to bring in more television, more viewers? I mean, the Olympics get a lot of run, but there's a real nationalism to that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, having personalities, like the identical twins and the Mole Sisters, and maybe, try to promote their top people better. I mean, I like track, but I'll be honest with you, I probably couldn't name, 5 or 10 track athletes during Olympic time, I know, but I think that would be what I'd say is really try to promote the personalities and the people, because there are some pretty interesting people in the sport. It's a cool sport to watch, but I think outside of Eugene, I just don't think it's on people's radar, and maybe that's the way to do it.
I think it's probably something they're going to want to address if they want to survive. Scott Hansen with us, Seattle Times. Speaking of survival, you recently had a rowing story that caught my eye, and there's a lot of history with the old Pac-12 in rowing, and certainly the Boys in the Boat and the book that was written, University of Washington. How is rowing as a sport at Washington, and what have you learned about that sport and maybe its future with the Huskies?
Yeah, I mean, rowing in Washington is like track in Eugene. I mean, it's a big deal in Seattle. I mean, we're probably the only paper in the country who covers rowing, and people come out to watch it. I mean, it's a big deal in the, you know, that we have the Windermere Cup every early May, where they have an international crew come, and there were several thousand people lined up along the Montlake Cut watching it. So it's a big deal. Like you say, with the boys on the boat, I think they've won 21 national titles in the men. The women have had a really great program over the years as well, several national titles. But the coaches are nervous. I mean, you know, the men's coach was told they needed to cut back from 58 people to 44, and the women's roster was 101 this year. They get ready for the Big Ten, because they have, it's a bigger regatta at the Big Ten Championships. I think they needed 7-8 to compete, so they went to 101 people this year, but now it's going to get cut to 68. And, you know, but you can have all the scholarships you want now out of that 68. It used to be 20. Huskies, probably because of the half share, is going to probably stay at 20. They're not going to get any more, whereas a team like Texas, as I said, they're going to offer 68 women scholarships. I think for the women's side, they're trying to figure out, well, heck, if we have 20 scholarships, how do we compete with Texas, with 68 and other programs who apparently are going to also increase their scholarships? So I think that's where the women are so concerned, is how are we going to compete with 20 scholarships when our competitors, like Texas finished right above them, has over, you know, triple the amount they have. And with the men, I think, you know, they're just trying to kind of stay the same, I think. They're getting 14 and a half scholarships right now. I think they'd be happy to keep that. But I think the worry is that they're going to lose that. And so they're trying at the University of Washington, hopefully get their scholarships endowed. So, you know, even if they get cut, they'll still be funded by, you know, donors. And currently the coach, Michael Callahan, his entire salary is endowed by the grant from the Nordstrom family. And then they're also worried, the men, they're going to other men's programs and saying, hey, what can we do to help you out? I mean, because if Washington gets their 14 and a half scholarships endowed, but every other men's program, you know, doesn't survive, then it doesn't matter. So they're working with Cal, their biggest rival, and trying to endow the Cal Dual to make sure that race that they have every year survives, and trying to make sure that Cal gets the scholarships they need. So I feel like the men, they're more on survival, just kind of keep it where it is. So sorry for the long-winded answer,
no,
but that's where we're at.
As you spoke about Washington trying to help Cal, I thought about the end of the movie, The Boys in the Boat, where, you know, it's like, hey, can they afford to get there? And here comes, you know, the other schools in to help and aid. There seems to be a real camaraderie in that sport where they know they're in it together. I am struck by this, and, you know, Scott, you probably have a great perspective because you're all over covering a variety of sports. Like, you see track and field, you see college football, you see rowing. I just wonder at what point we acknowledge that these things are not the same. Like, you know, some of these sports are really collegiate sports, and some of them look like semi-professional. And is part of the frustration there for sports like rowing that they look over and they go, hey, like, football's dragging us all over the country, and, you know, they didn't get a vote in it?
I think, you know, so coaches from the non-revenue sports, they obviously kind of probably have to, you know, bite their tongue, you know, because they realize that this, the house settlement deal, NIL stuff, I mean, it just puts them further and further away from the revenue-making sports, you know, in football and men's basketball. And, you know, and it's not good for them. I mean, like the men's coach told me, definitely not good. How bad it's going to be, we don't know yet. But, yeah, it is different. I mean, you know, most of the rowing team, you know, they're getting degrees in very hard majors, lots of business majors, and they're all really good students, and, you know, they're not getting any money whatsoever, and they're not going to get any money at UW. They're not going to give any money to rowers. So, you know, and I don't think there's a lot of NIL money for rowers at this point, although if there was, it'd probably be in Seattle. But, you know, I think the divide between, you know, the non-revenue sports and, you know, like golf and soccer and rowing and, you know, and the sports that make money, it's just, yeah, they're like, hey, one's like a professional and one's still amateur. And I'm sure that the athletes are pretty jealous of what's happening at the big time sports, because it's not coming down to them, that's for sure.
Scott Hansen with us, Seattle Times. Scott, you get a chance to see some baseball as well with the Mariners. The frustration from Mariners fans this season is what? Is it the same as last season, or has this season felt different?
Well, you know, Mariner fans, anytime, you know, you lose, what, 5 in a row or 8 of 9 or 11 of 20, you know, they're, you know, it's just the same old Mariners, same old Mariners. But obviously this year it's a little bit, it's a little different, obviously. I mean, last year the starting pitching was great and the hitting was, you know, pretty bad. This year hitting was pretty good for a while, but the starting pitching really hasn't been nearly what it has been. You know, a lot of that's because of injuries. But I feel like people don't see that. The hitting's all the problem. We'll get hitters, everything will be okay. But the truth is, I mean, if the starting pitching isn't like it was like last year, they're not going to go anywhere. I mean, you know, they don't need great hitting. They need just a little bit of that last year. They don't need great hitting. I feel like the common perception is everything is the same as it was last year among common fans. It's all the hitting issues. But I don't, you know, that hasn't really been the truth, right? The pitching has been worse than it was last year. The hitting's actually been better. But I think the common thing is that, yep, same old Mariners, can't hit. And, you know, and for the last few weeks, I guess that's actually been kind of accurate.
Yeah, but I also think, like, when you look at, you know, some of the large payroll teams and you look at where the Mariners are, I mean, is there enough investment? Is ownership spending enough?
I mean, you can make the case or not, but you can also make the case that a lot of the guys they have spent money on, $8, $9, $10 million on certain guys over the last few years, just really, you know, hadn't panned out. I mean, I guess Polanco's having a little better year this year. He's had a great start. But Mitch Garber, Mitch Haniger. Mm. I mean, they did spend money on guys. Luke Rayleigh hasn't been that good. So the guys they did spend money on, if you take all that money, you know. So yes, they haven't gotten the huge big splash, but the guys in that middle range haven't done what you expect them to do. And if they had, then maybe people wouldn't be complaining about them not spending more money.
Finally, Scott, I want to ask you, you know, you've announced that you're retiring after 21 years and, you know, you're going to, you know, I don't know what you're going to go do because you're going to miss it, aren't you, with the sports writing. But let me ask you this. You wrote on your final trip to the Masters about being there 14 years ago. You now covered 3 Masters events. For people who have never been to Augusta, what would you tell them? What do you lead with when people say, Scott, what's it like there?
I would say is that I've never seen so many different colors of green. I didn't know it existed. I mean, it was like 9, 10, 11 different shades. And when you go to like a Disneyland ride and you feel like, you know, it almost seems real, but it's not real. That's almost how it is at Augusta. It's real, but it doesn't seem real. It's almost too perfect to be real. You know, and then, you know, when you just being in a place where there's no cell phones. I mean, if you have a cell phone, you're kicked out, and you see the lines of, you know, the pay phones, people getting, you know, lined up to use the pay phones, and, you know, nothing more than $3 at the concession. I mean, you feel like you're back in the 1940s. So I'd say the greens, I mean, the different shades of green, and then just the throwback nature of living a time without phones and when things were kind of cheap.
There you go. Pimento sandwich and no cell phone. Not a bad way to leave. Scott Hansen, you're doing a great job. Keep being a Swiss Army knife. I appreciate you, man.
All right. Good talking to you, John.
Yeah, you too. There he goes. Seattle Times. Covered it all, seen it all. He's retiring in September. I want you to leave it here. Some parting thoughts coming up on the BFT radio show.